Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session on Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there, including the man sitting across from me, Stephen Davis.
My dad.
Your dad. And we are together in the Cleveland studio, and as you predicted, Hunter Biden was convicted. I want to say, I never thought he was not guilty. I thought he would get a hung jury. I thought the legal team would put up enough nebulous stuff about what defines when an addict is what that someone would say, I'm not sure. I was wrong. You were right.
Done. Yeah, so, yes, he, by law, he, like, there really wasn't a lot of wiggle room here. But what's interesting is, so you've got the political aspect of this, and you've got the legal aspect. Like, politically, right, you've got conservatives who are typically pro-Second Amendment, like, yay, Hunter Biden got convicted, yay, Hunter Biden got convicted. Even though this is, like, bad for the Second Amendment and access to guns. And then you've got Democrats screaming, like, oh, this is all political. He shouldn't have been convicted, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, this is, you know, like, they were just going after him because of Trump and blah, blah, blah. So there's that component, right, where you've got people on, you know, like, basically rooting against their standard interest, right, in the narratives that they go with. But from a legal standpoint, this is interesting, because there's already a case in front of the Supreme Court that's looking at whether it's constitutional to prohibit a person from accessing weapons because of gun use, right? Or drug use, I'm sorry. Like, so if you've got a sober person, but they've used drugs in the past or whatever, like, so it goes specifically to that question on the form that you fill out where it says, are you addicted to drugs, right? And then they're saying, well, Hunter Biden lied about it because he was using drugs at the time, or he was addicted to drugs at the time. But there is a Supreme Court case right now that the Supreme Court is looking at. Like, an appeals court already said, yeah, you really can't prohibit a person from buying a weapon because of past drug use, right? And so there's a little bit, you know, like, now, you know, people are going to get in there like, well, it says addicted. Are you addicted to drugs, right? And then the question is going to be, then you're going to dig down into, like, what is addiction and everything else. But it'll be interesting to see where Supreme Court comes out on this, because the Supreme Court could say, you know what, that is unconstitutional. It gets thrown out. And then Hunter Biden's going to be like, well, I got convicted on this, you know, however many months before. So then, you know, this shouldn't apply to me. So he's probably going to be able to appeal that. Like, depending on how the Supreme Court rules, he would likely be able to then appeal it. And then they're going to have to necessarily have to throw it out, because they could say that was the law at the time. But then it comes into play, like, but if the law has changed, then we may need to address the issue. So it'll be interesting to see where that sort of, how that plays out. Now, we've got SCOTUS and the bump stock ban being thrown out a little bit lower, but I'm going to bring it up because what we have right now is a Supreme Court that is, you know, with all our complaints about the Supreme Court right now, and there's plenty between
Alito
and Thomas and everything else, and just, like, worried about corruption, as a as a 2A supporter, right, and a gun rights advocate, you know, I've got a very, you know, beneficial Supreme Court right now, and the way that they're looking at things is, look, ATF, you can't come in after the fact, change rules and everything else, and just throw this stuff out there. You don't necessarily have that authority. Like, if anything that you're throwing out in terms of rules and bans and things that people can't do, it needs to come from Congress and not from you, and then you enforce it after the fact.
Right.
So the Supreme Court comes in, and they tossed out the bump stock ban, right, where there was a ban, and that came in under Trump, right? You can't have
bump. As an executive order, I believe.
Well, yes, right? Like, initially as an executive order, but that came through the ATF, right? Like, so, you know, Trump and the ATF worked together to ban bump stocks because of the terrible thing that happened in Las Vegas. And, you know, all those years ago, I think that was like 2017, 2018. And, you know, so the bump stock ban gets tossed out. And so this thing with Hunter Biden, it looks like it that also may get tossed out as well if you go. Like, the Supreme Court has been ruling against the ATF on these different issues very consistently, right? And so, you know, a number of these different restrictions as it relates to access to weapons look like they're starting to go to the wayside. And that's something, you know, I'm sure if you're anti-gun or you're, you know, a common sense gun law person or whatever, like, all this stuff has got to be unnerving. If you're a toy supporter like myself, it's like, well, this is good. This is the way it should be. You know, and where I come in on gun laws, I think I've been pretty clear. I'm not going to support them because I think a lot of them are targeted at poor people and people of color, and they have been historically, and you can actually prove that out given the history and based on why those rules and laws came to be. Now, more recently, I think they are more general talking about gun safety, but then my concern is how the laws are enforced, and we know how the laws will be enforced. They will be used to accelerate or add on to cases that are against, you know, people in poor and, you know, black neighborhoods, essentially, right? You're not going to see a lot of this stuff hit white people in the suburbs, if at all, unless they're the son of a president that the opposing party doesn't like, right? And so if we're going to use those laws that way, in a way that it's, you know, targeted at certain groups, at disadvantaged groups and everything else, then I can't, like, I'm not going to get behind these laws. And I've said, you know, regularly, you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in a tube as it relates to weapons, especially in the U.S. If you really wanted to stem the flow of weapons, you would have to start with the manufacturers. And a lot of the gun laws that are being put into place, no, people want to be able to sue gun manufacturers for gun crimes and everything else, which, you know, again, I don't feel is constitutional. But like, the only way to do it is to figure out a way to basically stop the gun manufacturers from making guns. Because if you don't do that, then you'll still have them. And so my thing is, like, if you can't stop them, then just everybody get one and learn how to use it, and then just make it a level playing field. Now, a lot of people don't like that because it's wild and crazy, but that's, like, it's already wild and crazy right now, and that's where I'm at.
Where do you stand on the bump stock thing? Because I have no trouble with a bump stock ban. I think they're just a stupid thing. They offer... I don't believe they offer anything in terms of personal protection.
Look, are bump stocks stupid? Like, if you know how to, if you know how to shoot, yeah, especially like if you know how to shoot an AR rifle, which is mostly what you would use a bump stock for, or what on, like, the type of weapon you would use it on. Like, I don't need a bump stock. I can get a binary trigger, right? I get a binary trigger that's going to allow me to fire three rounds at a time, and that three round burst with, you know, a light, with a light trigger pull, right? Like, you go with like a 2.5 trigger pull on an AR-15 with a binary trigger, and it might as well be a fully automatic weapon, right? And binary triggers are weird. They're not necessarily banned, but you kind of got to be careful in how you use them. Not to say that I have one or that I don't. but they are pretty badass if you've ever shot one. That being said, like, there's a lot of ways to increase your ability to fire rapidly without using something like a bump stock. Like, I could actually recreate the effectiveness of a bump stock with a fucking belt.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I've seen that done where you just hook your finger through,
right.
But you're not aiming then.
Right,
you're
exactly.
Probably not aiming with a bump stock most of the time because most people can't control that kind of rapid fire.
Right. I mean, even a fully automatic weapon without a bump stock is somewhat hard to control and aim. And when you're shooting like that, you're not necessarily trying to be a marksman. You're just trying to put as many bullets out there and hope that you hit something.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, like, so now that being said, like, do I think bump stocks are stupid? Yeah, but there's plenty of stuff that I think is stupid that shouldn't be banned, right?
Okay.
If some dipshit wants to put a bump stock on his gun, fine. Right, I'm not gonna say it needs to be banned. And listen, what was going on in Las Vegas? Like, that dude, he didn't kill as many people as he did because he had a fucking bump stock, right? When you see the videos of the weapons that he had in that room, I mean, he had fucking 50 cals up there. So, like, why he had all those weapons, how he was able to get them in the hotel, there's plenty of conspiracies about that whole sort of situation. But that dude wasn't using a bump stock to fire down on that crowd. That was a fully automatic AR-style weapon that guy had that was NFA that he had to go through all sorts of hoops and shit to get, right? With the law, like, you know, like, it, right. it doesn't track. Like, the bump stocks were just an easy thing to target because I think there was a gun in the mix that had a bump stock on it. But how he was able to kill that many people from that height, right? Like, that dude, it was just, like, I remember watching the video, like, and the flash never fucking stopped. Right, like that was a fully automatic AR. He probably had a drum on it in terms of the magazine because he wasn't reloading. Right, when you're firing fully automatic, you are firing multiple rounds in rapid succession, like in fractions of a second. Right, and your standard round capacity is 30, right, on an AR, and I mean, that guy was just mowing through people, so he probably had a drum magazine on that had, probably you 100, know, 100 yeah. rounds in it or something along those lines. And again, on a fully automatic AR-style weapon, like, that's what you're going to get. So banning bump stocks doesn't stop that from happening at all. That was just a stupid publicity stunt. Now, again, I think bump stocks are stupid, but I understand why there was pushback against them. Why I'm bringing this all up is just to say that with this Supreme Court, with this one particular issue, right, that I support, right, they're doing what I want them to do. But the same Supreme Court is tainted in a lot of ways, in my eyes, based off of the decisions that they've made. It just seems like these seem to be, like, yes, I support them, but these seem to be actually rooted in law, constitutional law, that I could actually have a reasonable scholarly debate about in a law, in a scholar, in a law school setting, or with other, you know, people who have studied constitutional law. Some of their other decisions are, they're kind of making up new standards. And even with some of these Second Amendment, they're stretching things. And while it's working out in my favor on gun rights and gun access, I can't ignore the fact that it is problematic in some of these other areas that I also feel passionate about where they're ruling against me, right? Like using that same sort of analysis. So then the question becomes, right, how do we deal with the Supreme Court and how they're administering these cases, right? And we don't, and what we're finding out is that we have very little resource and recourse in to rein them in. Right, Justice Roberts is kind of like our last defense because he's the Chief Justice, and he is not showing strong leadership, in my opinion, as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He should be pushing back against Clarence Thomas. He should be pushing back against Alito. He should have, I think, stood and had a stronger position on the
Dobbs case.
On the Dobbs case. I was going to say Roe, but they weren't deciding Roe, they were deciding Dobbs. And there are just other areas where I think that, you know, Justice Roberts has, again, not shown strong leadership, and the Supreme Court is now basically being run by Alito and Clarence Thomas, followed by Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Amy Comey Barrett, with, you know, Kagan and the rest kind of just, you know, like, throwing their hands up like we're trying, but we are outnumbered almost 2-1.
Right. I mean, what can Roberts really do, though? I mean, I know he's the Chief Justice, but this isn't like Speaker of the House where you can take people off committees and do shit like that. I mean, does he really have any power over the other justices?
This is where it comes down to skill, right?
To what?
To skill, right? Like, what's skill, like, sorry. What I mean by that is, take a good coach versus a bad coach, right? They're working within the same rules. They both are playing the same game. They both have players with talent. Some have more, some have less, right? But the good coaches figure out a way to maximize players' ability. They know how to move people around, shift them. They know what to say. They know how to get people to do what they need to do in order for the team to win. Right. And so, you know, can he take someone off a case? No, because the Supreme Court justice ultimately has his own, like, they, he or she can decide when they recuse themselves, and no one can make them. There's no mechanism to make a Supreme Court justice recuse themselves from a case. You know, like the only way to remove a Supreme Court justice is to impeach them, right? But Chief Justice Roberts can't influence that one way or another. But what he can do is just go into someone's office and have a stern conversation on what they should or should do. And then as a lawyer, you have to fucking convince them to do what it is that you want them to do or that you ultimately need them to do. And he hasn't proven that he has the ability to do that. And we don't even know if he wants to. Right, because he doesn't really say much when he does say anything, and that's kind of what we want our Supreme Court justices. We want them to stay out of the media. We don't want them talking constantly, and we just don't want them talking constantly.
Right.
Alito doesn't have a problem doing it, and Clarence Thomas picks and chooses when he does, and when he does, it's usually something that makes you hate life even more. But that's what I'm saying. Like, they're getting out. They're talking more in the media. They're doing these you know, speaking engagements,
right?
And they're getting more and more political. Like, I mean, Alito's not even hiding it with some of the speech engagements that he's working with. Like, they're clearly very far right, conservative, you know, Christo-fascist leaning organizations and platforms that he's speaking to. And, you know, Robert should be able to go to him and say, hey, you need to tone that shit down. You want to do speaking engagements, make some money on the side, fine, but let's keep it with things that are more objective, that are flat, you know what I mean? That,
sure.
That aren't clearly showing your bias, which could show that the court is tainted based off of your political leanings.
There was a woman, I don't remember what organization she was with, but she's very far left, and she did face-to-face with Roberts, Alito, and Alito's wife. Did you see this? She talks to them, she goes to Alito and says, we need to win this battle, you know, and just goes ultra-aggressive, Christian, whatever, and Alito was, oh, yeah. And then she did the same thing to Roberts, and Roberts said, well, you know, we're a country founded where we have freedom of religion, and I've got Muslim and Jewish friends, and no, I don't think we're, we need to up the Christianity of our nation. So Roberts said the right things, and Alito went along, and a lot of people on, like, you know, late night TV and The Daily Show were just dragging Alito over this. And I'm actually going to give him a bit of a pass in that someone walks up to you in an engagement and starts saying some kind of crazy shit, and you're probably just like, okay, what do I got to do to get this conversation to end? I don't view that as a policy decision on his part.
Not necessarily a policy decision, but look, this is the big leagues, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, as a judge, it doesn't get any bigger, and I need your awareness to be better. Like, I'm sorry, you don't. Like, yeah, you have freedom of speech, but you also have responsibility to this nation. So you need to curb and check what you say and how you say it. And may not like it. I don't actually give a fuck, right? Because your freedom to say whatever the fuck you want that could literally destabilize this country does not trump the fact that we need to hold this motherfucker together.
No, I guess,
you have First Amendment rights, but you are a public figure. And as a public figure, we have, you know, we fight against this, but the reality is you lose some of your autonomy, whether you're a professional athlete, a famous actor, an entertainer, a political figure. You lose some of that autonomy. You don't get to just say whatever the fuck you want without consequence. Donald Trump thought he could say whatever the fuck you want without consequence because he was rich and he's the president of the United States and he's got all this support. But guess what? There are consequences for it. Now, you want to call it a witch hunt or whatever, I don't care. You put that target on your back because you couldn't keep your mouth shut because you decided that you wanted to piss off half the country. You wanted to piss off the progressives. You wanted to piss off Muslims and Mexicans and black people. You wanted to rub people the wrong way. You wanted to piss off women. You wanted to say you didn't give a fuck about sexual harassment, all that other stuff. So you know what? They put a target on your back because you put it there because you didn't want to play the game, right? So you thought you could change the rules. Guess what? That's not how this works. It doesn't matter how rich you are, how big you are, right? There are absolutely consequences for your actions, right? So act accordingly.
Except in Alito's case, he's an unelected official who has a lifetime appointment.
Yeah.
So when a person in Congress says ridiculous shit, I'm like, okay, in 2 years, you're going to have to answer for this. Alito never has to answer for it. I mean,
to a degree. I mean, like, now, if he continues, right, If he continues to go further and further right and speak out more and more, like, could he be laying the groundwork for an impeachment, right? Like, or if we find out that, you know, if you find evidence that he was working directly with people on January 6th or working with Donald Trump specifically and doing certain things that he's not supposed to do in his specific role, right, then he could be laying the groundwork for an impeachment, and then he could be held accountable. Although, and for the Supreme Court justices, right, of all the political figures that are out there, right, from every level, from you know, the local level all the way up to the President of the United States, they're the most insulated from consequences for their actions and statements.
That's where I was going, yeah.
But there's still little avenues, or there's still narrow channels of accountability that we could hold them to, but we don't have many of those, right?
Right, and that's just my point, that an elected official is going to answer to voters when their term is up. These guys, they won't, and they have the ability to go into the chamber and just do their thing and not say a word. Alito doesn't seem to be very good at not saying a word. But I guess I'm giving Roberts a bit of a pat on the back in the sense that, okay, I saw that. I wasn't going to rat you out, but yeah, that was not quite a Snoop Dogg hit, but we'll be seeing you tomorrow. All right, so I'm going to jump topics now because while we still have you with us, you wanted to put in the House wants to subpoena Biden recordings of something?
Yeah, so, sorry, I have a little cough here. So
great cover up, Steve. No one sees through that at all. I got some cough drops if you want. I'm sure that will help.
So the Republicans have been trying to get this recording of an interview that Joe Biden did with the special counsel when, you know, Comer and all his buddies were going after Biden for the corruption charges and Hunter Biden and the laptop. And so the DOJ says, we're not going to press charges against Biden, like, we're not doing it. He's the President of the United States. This is, like, there's no, like, solid evidence of anything. There's not enough here where we're going to disrupt the whole country for you guys' political witch hunt. Like, we're just not doing it, right? So the House gets mad that they're not going to bring charges against Biden. So they're like, well, we want the recordings of his interview because when you read the transcripts, it sounds like he's lost and confused and he doesn't know what's going on and his cognitive ability is in question. We want to hear it, right, for ourselves. And the DOJ is just like, no, right? Like, you're Congress. You don't just get to get, you know, recordings and
political
documents.
Fodder,
right.
Help us, yeah.
Well, no, right. Well, you don't get to take our work product, right, just because you want it. There's a longstanding policy that the DOJ and Congress are separate, and just because you want something doesn't mean you get it. And Congress is saying right now, like the, you know, Johnson and everybody else, well, we should get it and we should get access to it, so we're going to continue to push for it. And DOJ is saying, like, the only way for you to get it is to go through court. We're the fucking court. We're not giving it to you. Go away. Right? And the GOP doesn't get it. Right, like, so they're going to continue to try to push this thing, and they're going to hope that they can get it in front of an appeals court or something along those lines that will rule in their favor. But it'll probably end up going up to the Supreme Court, and this is one where I could see the Supreme Court ruling against Congress, saying, "No, you're not going to get them, right? Like, you don't want, like, another situation where if this goes to the Supreme Court, what they're going to tell them, like Alito and everybody else, is like, look, we're with you." Right? Alito, this is Alito and Clarence Thomas.
Right.
We're with you, but you don't want this. Because if you do this, that opens the floodgate for it to be done to you. And you motherfuckers are really stupid. So you don't want this. We're going to push this aside, and we're not going to give you access to those audio tapes. We're going to leave that sort of division of access as it is, because this is us looking out for you. Right? That's where this goes. Right, because there's no way in hell that they're just not thinking, right? They are just not thinking, especially if they are able to get Trump back in the White House. Do you really think that this is a good idea for Congress to just be able to say, you know what, we want this, DOJ, we want that, because we want to make it public so everybody could see whatever it is we want them to see?
How is it not an attorney-client privilege thing, or is that what the Supreme Court would have to rule on? Because he was talking to...
No, this
although,
is...
Although
this
that's
is,
not his attorney,
this
special
is not,
counsel.
Yeah, this
sorry,
is special
my bad.
Counsel.
No, no, no,
this
no.
Is,
Sorry.
This is an interview. This is different, right?
Right. Like, no, I withdraw.
Overruled, bitch.
So, speaking of Trump and returning to office, he did return to Capitol Hill, where he received a hero's welcome from members of Congress, Republican members of Congress and Senate. That obviously rubs me the wrong way, just because it's almost like he's returning to the scene of a crime. The fact that he hasn't been there since January 6th, and he goes back there now, it almost feels like a fuck you to the people who, like me, and I believe you, are still furious about January 6th, and still feel like the people who dismiss that are, I think, unpatriotic isn't a strong enough word.
Okay, so I agree with you, right? He is saying, fuck you, I don't care about January 6th. They did what they did. I got them riled up. Was he plotting to kill Mike Pence? And I don't know. But the reason why I'm giving it sort of a flippant I don't care is because, like, everything he's done since then has been a fuck you to the American people. Even the ones that support him. Every single thing this guy has done and said has been a fuck you to what it is to be an American, what I believe it is to be an American, and what this country stands for. So this is, like, everything he does, right, and has done, it's like his middle finger has never gone down for me, right? So I don't look at this as some sort of special extra. You know, like he has another, right? He's just been giving me the double bird, you know, since January 6th, since he lost the election, right? It's not like it doesn't even stand out because just it's his whole existence at this point is a fuck you to me, in my opinion.
And by the way, I've been watching a lot of Trump rally content, and he is all over the place. In Arizona, he literally said to the audience, it was like 105 degrees out. It was a health risk for anyone out there. And he literally was like, I don't care about you. What about me? He said, I don't care about you. I just want your vote. He said those words. Now, is he being a bit, whatever, joking around? I don't know. He also went back on his shark electric boat thing. If you haven't seen it, just Google Trump speech Las Vegas.
Like, him with the electric boats and water, that, like, that really, it's, I don't know, that's a special type of stupid at this point, right? Like, I don't know what else to,
his claim was he went to a boat manufacturer in South Carolina, and the boat manufacturer is being told he's being pressured to make only electric boats. And he then said, the guy said to me, no one's asked me that question before, but what if a boat sank and you had... I'm like, yeah,
ask,
no one's
wait, asked wait, wait, that hold question. Hold on, hold on. You have to add... You, this is the part of the story. Even when you told it to me, you have to explain what the question is.
The question is, what would happen if an electric boat sank because of the weight of the battery and you had the choice of staying on the boat and getting electrocuted, but there's a shark 10 yards away, so would you rather get eaten by a shark or get electrocuted? And then he took a stand, and he said, I'd rather get electrocuted than eaten by a shark, which, frankly, I agree. If I have those two choices, I'm anti-shark. And then he went on to say that people were defending the action. There was a shark attack, I think, in Florida, and a woman got her leg bitten off. And he was like, and these people are demented. They were saying the shark didn't mean it. I'm like, oh my God, man.
Okay, so we need to go back. The whole thing with the sharks. Between your disdain for sharks and him saying that people were defending the actions of a shark, that's a whole other conversation. But going back, so he thinks, like, so the boat sinks. Right,
because of the weight of the battery.
Because of the weight of the battery. Because, you know, engines are super light. So the boat sinks because of the weight of the. So somehow they managed to get a boat to production, right? That people could buy where the battery was too heavy and it would sink. But okay, fine.
In shark infested waters.
Right. So you're in shark infested waters with this boat with an electric motor, and it goes down. So, like, when does it start to electrocute you, and how much time do you have, like, as you're Like, how much time do you have to, like, get swim away from this boat that's going to electrocute you into the mouth of the shark? Because when do you start to get electrocuted?
First of all, you don't, because the battery would short out if it had any electrical activity at all. But there are electric boats out there. There's something called Duffy boats that are really popular in Southern California. They're little electric boats that they use to scoot around the harbors and stuff. Ugh. I've been on them. There were no sharks that I saw, so I didn't have to make this life choice. But,
I don't understand why you had to add the sharks.
I don't.
Like, you're in a sinking boat that apparently is going to electrocute you. Like, you've got enough problems. I don't understand why the sharks were necessary.
All right. Rewind and listen to why Steve is taking this quite the way he is. But you're right. But the funny thing was, when that happened in Vegas, his teleprompter went off. And so he literally starts bitching about the teleprompter, starts bitching about the contractor that made the teleprompter, then goes on to say, they say I don't pay contractors. I don't pay shitty contractors. They've done a shitty job. So he's basically telling the company to set it up, I'm not going to pay you. You're not getting paid. But it was just a nonsensical rambling. I admit Joe Biden's a gaffe machine. He's slowed down. He's whatever. But this is insane. And when you back in the day, it was, Obama can't do anything without a teleprompter. Well, A, that was bullshit because he was responding to live questions when they were saying that. B, we've seen what Trump can do without without a teleprompter, and it ain't fucking pretty.
It's so frustrating that
This guy could be our president,
right?
Again?
Like that the fate of our country, like weight, is like hanging in the balance right now, and it like it's terrifying, but it's like also stupidly hilarious. You take any one of these people, right? Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, Comer, like all these people, like you're just like, how are you? Even like Senator Bob Menendez. Right? Like, how is that guy real? He literally looks like a character from the Jetsons. Right? Like, you look at him, and I could easily see him being drawn in that how, you know, what was it, Hanna-Barbera? Right? Like, I mean, come on. Like, this can't be real, but
it's real.
But it is. And it's terrifying.
All right. So, the debate between Trump and Biden is scheduled for June 27th. And they've established a bunch of rules for the debate, which I think favor Biden. They also favor sanity. So there will be no audience. They will not have the mic of the person who's not supposed to be talking on. So they can't just talk over each other. Both, I think, are great things, but they both go away from Trump's core strength of, I'm just going to bulldoze through this. You're going to try to talk. Oh, here's me rambling again. What are you going to do about it? Rules, I don't give a fuck about rules. And by the way, can you imagine being the person who's vetting an audience for a Trump-Biden debate? I mean, the odds of having that audience be sane, respectful, and responsible. And I won't put it entirely on the right. I think it would be nutty shit on both sides. I think the right move is the two of them talking one-on-one. I also am going to throw this out there, and I know this is going to get some hackles up, but I saw a little bit of Hannity's show about a week and a half ago. And he started laying out the foundation for Trump to say, I'm not going to do the debate. He said that, I think Trump should insist that Biden have a cognitive test and a drug test if he's going to agree to do the debate. And that, I think, feels like them laying the groundwork for Trump to throw in a last minute, oh, if you don't do this, I'm not going to do the debate, because I don't think he wants it. I don't think his team wants it, because as much as Biden is slowing down, whatever you want to call it, Trump, we just talked about, is just off the rails, and there's no teleprompters, and there's no, without an audience to play to, this is not going to his core strength. So I wouldn't put money on this, but I am not going to be shocked if come June 24th, Trump makes a bunch of demands and says, if I can't get this and I can't get this, then it won't be a fair debate. The system's rigged. I'm not doing this unless these things happen. And it is 100% on Biden to say, fine, test me. Fuck off. I mean, the whole cognitive test thing is so stupid. Like, if you think you're fighting a guy with impaired cognition, or not fighting, debating a guy with impaired cognition, and you can't win, that's on you.
One, I would love to see Biden and Trump fight.
No, you wouldn't.
I love old man fights. I love them. They're hilarious. And I think this would be very hilarious. But the funny thing is, so Trump was calling, I think he was in Arizona, he was calling for this cognitive test, right? And he says to the crowd, you know, like, hey, I think Biden needs to take this test just like I did, right? And he's like, you guys all remember Ronnie Johnson, right? Ronnie Johnson, he was a doctor. He was a Congress, elected to Congress. He's a doctor, said I was fit as a bull and smart as a whip and all this other stuff. Everybody knows Ronnie Johnson, right? Except the doctor's name is not Ronnie Johnson. It's Ronnie fucking Jackson. So here... I don't know what I said. Ronnie fucking Jackson, y'all. But here's the thing, Donald, right? And this is where I go to, he puts the target on his back because he doesn't know how to shut the fuck up, right?
Yeah.
If, Donald, you are going to call for a cognition test to test someone's cognitive abilities, then you can't immediately, in the sentence after you call for this cognitive test, get the name of the doctor who gave you your cognitive test wrong. Right? Like, I can't sit there and say, hey, Jim, I think you're mentally slipping, right? And you need to take a cognitive test like I did from, you know, Dr. No, whatever.
Hey, John, you need to take this. My name's Jim.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, you can't fuck that up. But he did. And no one cares. I agree with you. I think that they're going to go to, if he won't submit to a cognitive test and he won't submit to a drug test, then we won't do it. And I think then at that point, you know, like, I think Biden would have to do the cognitive test. I think he would have to do the drug test. Now, the issue is, I think that, I don't know. Now, here's another weird way that you could spin this. I think by Trump throwing out the cognitive test and the drug test, you're right. I don't think his team wants to do it. And we know Biden's team wouldn't want to actually do a cognitive test, right? Because no matter what the result is, right, if it's not basically 100% or however they're scored, then it's going to be spun bad by the right and Fox News and Hannity. Like, they can't win by submitting to the test. They also can't win by not doing the test, but by not doing the test, like, you don't have any sort of definitive result that someone can go to, right? Because we know that he's not going to test at maximum cognitive efficiency.
You know, the test is pretty fucking rudimentary. I'll put it out there. I hope she doesn't listen to this episode because it was kind of a family joke. But my mom took a mental acuity test.
Oh, why are you bringing Nancy into this?
Because my sister insisted she take this thing and was convinced. And my mom went, I passed this thing easily. So it's this test isn't a...
Oh, my God. Brain. Jim.
What?
It's Father's Day.
It is Father's Day. My mom.
I know. Still.
Okay, I don't...
Don't go down this road.
Well, my point is, the cognitive test isn't exactly...
Stop saying words!
No, I'm not. Biden would pass a cognitive test. I would bet money on it.
You realize how this is playing, right? You're saying, my mom took and passed a cognitive test, she could do it.
She said that to me! I'm really hoping she doesn't listen to this episode, though. But if you call my mom, you motherfucker...
I'm going to tell her.
But seriously, it's not like, you know, what's the square root of 72? It's really basic, like, is your brain working? And
is it 3?
It's 3.
I don't know. What is it?
Square root of 72 actually is not a full number. It's going to be 7. It's going to be 8 point something. But I'm not going to do the math on it. It's going to be around 8.5. So, in any event, the cognitive test shouldn't scare Biden off. And I actually see this as a potential backfire thing. Because if Biden passes the test, A, it's not like it's going to be done in public. You know, Trump says he aced
the thing. Well, here's the thing. I guess the concern is, even if it is rudimentary, like, what if Trump, let's say it's a scale of 1 to 10, Trump gets a 9, Biden gets an 8. Like, we all know it doesn't matter, and who fucking cares? But at the same time, like, you know how that's going to get played out on the conservative side of media. Now, here's the other thing. I want to make this other point, too, right, when it comes to the election. A little bit of a side note here.
All right.
Enthusiasm doesn't count as more than one vote, right?
Agreed.
So the one thing we have to take into mind or into consideration is that there's a lot of enthusiasm behind Trump, right? Like, they have
100%.
I think they've got a little less than a third, right, of the
general population,
general voting population. Yep. But there's a whole lot of other people on the other side that are like, and we've seen it, right? And we saw it in the last election, right? How could Biden have this many more votes? Like, look at all the enthusiasm behind Trump. Now, Trump and his team are going to say, "Oh, well, the election is rigged." But the reality is, like, while you have a lot of people that are willing to be vocal about how much they love Trump, right? There are a lot of people who do not love Trump, and they don't love Biden, but they're not going to vote for Trump, but they don't care enough to where they're going to participate in a poll. They're not going to do your survey on Twitter, right? Like, they're not going to show up on any sort of ranking metric that you can refer to, right? But what they will do is show up and vote, right? And they'll be like, "Listen, I got a lot of shit going on between going to work at my 9-to-5 where I end up working, you know, 10, 15 hours of overtime. I've got, you know, a kid in soccer, a kid in volleyball, and, you know, another kid on the way, right? Like, I'm trying to keep my lawn looking good, right? I'm trying to master smoking meat, and I'm trying to keep my wife interested. I don't have a lot of time for politics, right? So when I do hear the news and I hear this Donald Trump guy doing something asinine again, right, that just a normal person realizes is ridiculous, then I don't like that guy. This Biden guy is an old bumbling idiot, but at least it seems like he's got our country's best interest in hand. That's the guy I'm going to vote for. I'm not taking your poll. I'm not answering when you call, right? Like, I'm not taking some sort of quiz. You don't know that I exist, but then I'm going to go into the fucking voter booth, and I'm going to vote. And that's what happened, right? And that's what's going to happen again. But with Trump, there's a lot of enthusiasm. You have a lot of people that are very loud about how much they love Trump, right? And everything that is MAGA, right? But it's the loudest. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, and they are the very squeaky wheel, but that doesn't mean that they have some disproportionate majority and influence over the election. And that's one thing that we have to remember and take into account when we're thinking about how this all plays out.
Yeah, case in point, I've never seen a vehicle drive by with a huge flag hanging off of it, you know, flapping in the wind for any political figure other than Trump. I've never seen someone driving with a Biden.
There were a few Obama crazies.
Did you ever see an Obama flag flying from a car? Did you ever see Obama's head ripped body firing like Rambo?
No. No,
you did not. No one put Obama's head on Terry Crews and said that did not happen.
So, Jim, I'm gonna. There's two things that are gonna happen here that you don't like. One, I'm going to be right. Two, we're going into the world of porn. Okay.
Oh boy. Okay, you're right. I'm not gonna like either of these things.
So, in that other world, there were plenty doctored images of. I'm just saying they still happened. They still happen.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And they made their way, and like some of them made their way onto social media, right? Like, I mean, if he had pants on, he would have no shirt. It clearly wasn't his body, it was his head. But there were plenty, and listen, both Barack and Michelle Obama did get a certain sort of like cult following when it came to fashion and style, right? Like, black women. Like, I remember
more Michelle than Barack, right? He got made fun of for his dad jeans and his
pants at times, but like Barack's suits were always clean, right? And there were a lot of stylists that came. Now, there were some that were critical because they weren't.
He wore a tan suit, which is the biggest.
Well, that was more Fox News.
That was stupid.
But like they both became sort of pop culture icons. Michelle, And like black women and Michelle with her hair, especially like there. I remember when Barack got reelected, right? And Michelle came out and like I remember her hair standing out, being like, "Wow, Michelle, oh, okay, right?" And then it was like all the People Magazine and Vogue and all the right, and then social media was like right. But Barack at the same time became. There was definitely a cult following for him. Was it like Trump's with golden idols and all that other stuff? No. But you still also had that. I mean, like, how many people called him a rock star, right? Yeah, and why did they call him that? Because of the way that people followed him. And so, but at the same was true for him, right? Like, enthusiasm doesn't necessarily mean that there's more votes. What means there's more votes is more votes. There were more people that just genuinely felt like this is the right guy. And we saw that with Biden being elected, right? The issue with Biden, though, is because of the things that we're talking about, the fact that he's a gaffe machine, the fact that he's slowing down, some of his policies, look, this dude's got a war in Ukraine and Russia. He's got a war going on with Israel where Israel's saying we're fighting for our lives. But then on the other side, you're saying, well, Israel's committing a genocide.
Right.
Right. You've got a tension with China, right, that is starting to get very uncomfortable. We've got warships.
Russian warships, yeah.
Russian warships off the coast of Cuba. Right, doing exercises.
Right, that makes me extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because there are multiple examples of wars that the U.S. has gotten into based on nebulous incidents that occurred on U.S. naval vessels. The Spanish-American War starts because of the USS Maine blowing up, which turns out it was a boiler explosion. Right. But we said we were attacked. Boom, here we go. Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam. They were waiting for an excuse. That whole event is very much in question as to whether or not it was even an attack on the U.S. or whether it was...
I mean, Gulf of Tonkin, I think, is even different than what happened with the U.S. Maine, right? Like, you have an explosion. It's easy to see, like, oh, okay, that it was a cannon, right?
Right.
But to your... Like, I agree with you, right? Like, and so that is why, you know, warships off the coast of Cuba, which is right next to Florida and everything, and our you know, Southeast right. Atlantic, is terrifying. You know, so Biden is in a hard position. Some of his policies with these various scenarios are questionable, right? If you're just looking at them objectively, right? Like some of his policy with Ukraine and how they could use the weapons and when they decided to start to give aid, right? Like those things can raise questions. The just sort of, you know, blind support of Israel and not pushing back against them when we all felt that, you know, Israel was going too far. There's just a lot in the right now recent history where if you're looking at it, we're going into an election in November. This stuff is happening in real time right now. And he's having to deal with it. That's not helping him at all.
Right. And Biden just came out and said to Zelensky, he's basically let go of the leash and said, you can use U.S. weapons
yes.
to strike military installments in Russian territory.
Right.
So now U.S. weapons are hitting.
But the issue is, you could have done this ages ago, right? I mean, this war's been going on now for two years, right? Like, you could have done this a year ago. You could have done this 18 months ago.
I think they desperately wanted to not do it.
I agree, but now we're here. Right. And the right move from the get-go was like if Ukraine was going to win this, they were going to have to be able to strike within the borders of Russia.
Right.
Right. And they
had because Russia could park munitions like right over the border and
exactly.
say, nah, I can't do anything.
Exactly. And, which is what they did.
Yeah.
You know, and they knew they couldn't use U.S. weapons. Now, France and a couple other countries and jumped
Germany,
in. Yeah. And Germany said you could use ours. But the American weapons are the ones that you really want. Right?
Right. Even though I would not be shocked
if American France and Germany were the weapons
through,
that were...
Yeah, yes. I mean...
I agree. But, you know, like we we're giving the bulk, right? The majority sure. of it. So, you know, and there's even debate on how much we should... Like, should we have given more? Should we have given less? Whether you're supportive of the Ukraine effort or not, I think you have criticisms of the Biden camp. Again, the entire situation in Palestine with Israel and in Gaza and everything, there's, again, on either side, whether you support it or you're against how the administration is going, you have your criticisms and complaints.
Right.
And all that, again, feeds into how close this election can be, right? Now, you've got Trump supporters saying, like, look, we're going to run away with this thing. Look how much support we have. No. That's just, you have a lot of people that are very loud. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have more numbers. But Biden can't sit and rest on his laurels because you've got some serious problems. You've got some serious flaws. And people feel strongly about these issues. We didn't even mention it, immigration, right?
Right.
And the issues over at the border, right? Like, so Biden has his hands full.
Absolutely.
And
I mean, I'm not giving him as tumultuous a time as I can think of.
Right.
When you break it all down.
It's, I don't want, he's not failing, right? He's not doing terrible, but I don't know if I'm giving, he's not getting an A. You know, I don't even know if he's getting a B with it right now. So we're in a very tumultuous time going into an election. I need Joe Biden to win, not because I want him to win and I think that he's right. I just think that that's how bad and dangerous a Donald Trump victory could be, right? We've seen some of the documents that they put out with this Project 2025 that is very frightening to me, that I don't like, I don't trust, I don't think it's good for, it's not good for anything. I don't want, like, I can literally point to a specific document that they published that is out on the internet that anyone can read. And if they're saying that this is his agenda, I fully and wholly reject that agenda. So if that means I have to vote for someone that I also think should not be the person in the White House, then so be it.
That can't have been easy for you. Well, actually, you know, I know it was easy for you because Trump makes it black and white. I mean, I've said it flat out.
Voting against Trump is the right choice, not because Joe Biden is all that much better, but because he's not that.
Right. Right? He's not swearing vengeance on all those who've wronged me, and I want to be a dictator for a day, and I mean, some crazy shit, and then there's the whole electrocution shark thing, which draws into question, like, where is this guy's brain? And just to touch back base on the war in Palestine, both Hamas and the Israeli government are digging in and saying, we won't have a ceasefire unless we get...
But if a Tesla crashes in water, would you get electrocuted?
No. I don't believe you would. But if a Tesla crashed in front of a shark, would Elon Musk save you, is my question. All right. That landed.
I was picturing Elon Musk ripping off his shirt and jumping into the water.
Just tearing it.
Don't worry, I'm on my way.
Running into a phone booth and coming out. Right.
But then not saving you and figuring out, like, there's a button on a Tesla that you can push that saves a Tesla and it just leaves you below.
Leaves you the sharks.
And then you're just like, oh, that's such a cool feature, and I'm being eaten by sharks.
All right. We're getting close to the end here, and the Gaza situation just keeps getting worse because both sides are digging in saying we won't stop fighting unless we get things that they know they're not going to get.
Yeah, I...
The people who have the ability to get a ceasefire to happen don't want it.
Look, I'm starting to believe, I hate this because I think in order to really truly understand what we're dealing with, like, you have to do a very deep dive into who is Israel, how they came to be. Where did Palestine come from? How did it come to be? Who is Hamas? What is their history? What have they done? What are they willing to do? Who supports who in the region, right? Where's the money flowing to and from? And that is a huge lift,
right?
Right, that no one can do on their own, right? Like, I think even if you deeply understand Israel, I don't think you can fully understand who and what Hamas is, right? Because I think Hamas is something that is like Hamas is a terrorist organization born maybe of necessity based off of what was happening between Israel and the Palestinians.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't necessarily justify how they go about doing what they do, but you understand where they came from. And when you understand where they came from, you understand how far they're willing to go to break away from and destroy Israel, right? You understand where it's coming from, but by understanding where they're coming from and what they're willing to do, you understand why Israel's like, look, yeah, we might have fucked them over, but if we don't get rid of them, they will never stop. So we have to do everything that we have to do, and if it includes killing some of their kids and women and whatever, that's for us. We have to accept that. And when so
especially if Hamas is willing to say we're behind these human shields, what right? You like, do? And, like, right? Because okay,
Hamas
do.
Is like, we're more than willing to sacrifice. You're willing to sacrifice. We're willing to sacrifice whoever.
One of their leaders was caught on audio, flat out saying that. I forget the guy's name, but he was like one of the top guys in Hamas, and he flat out said, it is worth civilian deaths, worth Palestinian deaths to accomplish our goal. He is, I don't think he's on record. I think it was kind of a hot mic situation.
But it's crazy because you've got the leadership of Hamas that is living in Qatar. And Qatar is an interesting associate of the United States. And it's so complex. And so I hate the fact that I can't just settle on a position. But the reason why I'm not doing it, because I'm not concerned about me knowing so much that I could predict and tell you what's right. I'm just trying to follow the situation as it goes, as a human, right, that cares about other humans and hates to see the death of innocent Palestinian people, the death of 3,000 Jewish people, the soldiers that are being killed, the lives that are being ruined, the youth and the people going into Hamas who have had such a miserable life experience that they feel the only way to then live their life is through literally killing other people in the name of what they believe in.
Yeah.
That is a fucking awful situation from head to toe, and I'm sorry if I don't have a strong stance one way or the other, because as you learn more information, you realize how fucking complex and how, like, people's entire existence is tied to this.
Yeah.
And
that's something I've said a bunch of times, and I think we've both said it and both agree that one of the real flaws is people say, the problem with this situation is X. It's way more complicated than one thing. If there was one issue, we could just go, if we just change this, we can fix it. You're right. There's also the behind-the-scenes geopolitical stuff. You sort of mentioned proxy wars without actually saying the words, but Iran has political motivations, and they can just keep stirring the pot, and they're back in Hamas.
Iran, Turkey, and Syria, and Saudi Arabia.
Everyone's got a stake in this, and, I mean, we do too, but, you know, it's really a lot easier to fight a war that all you have to do is throw some money at it, poke the bear, and say, let that happen on someone else's turf. And it's gross, but that's what is happening. So all these innocent people are dying, and I do have a lot of problems with a lot of the way Israel's handled things. But to your point, I put myself in their shoes, and I'm looking at October 7th, and I'm saying, you know, we can't play nice. Sorry, we'd love to.
And the fucked up part, I guess, for me, is the realization what you just said, I put myself in their shoes, right?
Right.
So when you put yourself in the Israeli shoes, clear as fuck.
Yeah.
But then if you do that, then that means you got to put yourself on the other side in their shoes. But when you do that, you have to have an understanding of the history of the last 200 years, right?
Certainly the last 60.
No, I think you got to go further back. You got to go back past World War II. You got to go back past World War I and understand how the Jews were chased literally across Europe.
True.
Right? Because that also matters.
Right.
Right? It explains why they are as hardened as they are. Right?
Absolutely.
But then you also have to understand the history of the Palestinians, right? And look, the history of the Palestinian people, right, that we're calling Palestinians, it's not all, you know, oh, woe is me, right? Like they have done some dickhead shit, right, over, you know, again, that same time period, right? So the shit is very complex, and it's not just as easy as good versus evil, pick a side.
Right, exactly. Exactly. When you put yourself in the shoes of people, people don't just choose to commit suicide bombings because they're bored on a Saturday. They feel absolute desperation.
they're mad that OU lost, so they're just going to go strap a bomb to their chest and go blow people up. Right, that's not how it works.
Exactly. And I mean, think about it. That for someone to feel that desperate, that they're guaranteed death.
But it's not even desperate. But desperate isn't right, because to be at a point where you feel so passionate that it makes sense to strap a bomb to your chest and go kill people that you don't know, you've never met, that have done nothing to you.
Right. You're running your own wall.
Right. But just because they exist, that their lives are worth sacrificing. And what's wild, right, is that, you know, in almost every religion, you know, that I know of, the sanctity of life is something that is at the heart and root of almost every religion, right? Like how powerful our existence is,
right,
is something that is supposed to be cherished and something that is supposed to be nurtured, right? So and it's whether it's Christianity or Judaism or Islam, or just pick a religion, right? The sanctity of life is the key. So to get to a point where it's worth sacrificing this thing that is so sacred, and multiple and as many of them as you need to, like there's just
including
something,
including yourself.
There's like you have to understand there's a different mindset, and it just goes beyond good and evil.
Right.
Right? This is not just draw a line in the sand, pick a side.
Right. I mean, I used to go nuts when we invaded Iraq and attacked Afghanistan. I was all for responding to 9/11. But the whole argument of they hate us because of our freedoms. I'm like, that is such a stupid, childish argument. There is so much that led up to this. And so many times people have used that argument. Well, they just hate our freedoms. And I started explaining, well, here's a series of events. And I get immediately tuned out.
Yeah.
I start talking about, well, this happened here, then we funded the Mujahideen against the Russians, and then we aren't. Tuned out. It's freedoms. All right. I do want to jump to Jerry West, because Jerry West passed away, but before I do that, I feel obligated to push back about your Obama porn argument, because there is an entire series of porn movies called Nailin Palin. So
what? How is that pushing back?
It's not pushing back. I'm just saying that there's Of the people, of the politicians represented in porn, Nayland Palin is my favorite. Okay, there, I said it.
All right, like, just say you like Nayland Palin.
I do.
The chicken
like
platter was hot. Smoke show.
Yes.
Fine?
Okay.
Why are you trying to take me down?
I'm not trying to take you.
Yeah,
right,
you did.
Maybe I did. I just had to bring up Nayland Palin, and I was going to do it by any means possible.
Fine,
it's a complicated thing, Steve. There's a lot
of
things going
on. It's not, though. I would have supported that all day. You know this. For the longest time, I thought the woman...
I found out that existed, I'm like, I'm looking. I'm sorry.
So the girl that portrayed Sarah Palin in that adult film feature, for the longest time, I thought was Stu's fiance from Hangover, The Hangover.
Oh, my God.
Because they kind of look alike, and I was like, holy shit, did this chick do all this porn and do Hangover? That is fucking awesome. It's not, and if you remember her character in the storyline, like,
I was engaged to that character.
What?
My ex-fiance was all, use your Rogaine. I mean, my ex-fiance, when I saw that movie, I kind of got chills.
Did she fuck a bartender on a cruise?
He wasn't a bartender. Not to my knowledge, and she was not grossed out by semen. All right, this is not. You want to play rough, bitch? We can do this. All right,
playing rough.
All right. Let's move on. All right, we're now disrespecting the great Jerry West. Jerry West passed away, and
Jerry. Okay, Jerry West was a great player. I thought he was really cool. As a kid growing up, if you haven't picked this up, I watched a lot of old sports, right? Because you had ESPN Classics, and they would play old football games, baseball games, basketball games. I watched all that shit. And it's awesome, right? Like, you, sure. As a kid growing up in the 90s, being able to see Jerry West play and not win championships, or being able to see Joe Namath play, and seeing all these games and everything else is really cool. So that's... my introduction to Jerry West, before recent history, was I just got to watch him on ESPN Classics and playing these games, and dude was really good. Shorts are really short, but, he was pretty unstoppable. It's wild, right? Same thing with Bill Walton, right? And that's where, for me, a lot of my sports knowledge comes from, just, being a kid growing up in the 90s, sitting at home in the summer. If we weren't riding bikes outside in the park or doing dumb shit that we probably shouldn't have been doing for the mob, then we were watching ESPN Classics, right? But then in recent history, you've got, what was that show on HBO?
Winning Time,
right? And then it points out that Jerry West is a complete fucking psychopath.
My neighbor, when I lived in West Virginia, used to play golf with Jerry West. And in the show, when he is just a meltdown on a golf course, if he breaks his putter in half or fires into a pond or something, I'm like, I wonder if Byron had to deal with that shit. So
yeah, I mean, I thought it shed an interesting light on him, but what's funny is, so the show comes out, right, shows that Jerry West is out of his fucking mind, and then there's an interview on ESPN where Jerry West is losing his fucking mind over his characterization of being a person that loses their fucking mind. And he's, threatening the show and all this other stuff. And it was,
Oh, finish it. He threatened to take it to the Supreme Court.
Yes, he
did. I'm not a psycho. The portraying me as a psycho. And I will take this all the way to the Supreme Court.
He said these
that
words.
That is not the way you get that message across. But an all-time great player. Yeah. I mean, the logo of the NBA is Jerry West. Played for the West Virginia Mountaineers in the 60s?
Yeah.
50s? So, anyway, but he's definitely a legend, and he must have been a trip to be around, but...
it's pretty well... And what's crazy is he ends up being an executive for,
the Lakers,
but also for the Clippers, which the connection between the Clippers and the Lakers is pretty hilarious and weird. And are you watching the show about the Clippers on...
I'm not. I don't know what is on, but I'm not watching
it. Oh, it's about...
Donald Sterling? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's his story.
Is it a documentary, or is it like a live-action
portrayal? It's like
It's like Winning Time?
It's like that. Lawrence Fishburne is playing Doc Rivers.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Ed O'Neill is playing Donald Sterling.
I'm very intrigued.
Yes.
Is there any connection between you and Ed O'Neill? They both went to Ursuline High School. There you go.
I mean,
and Steve broke his record.
Ed O'Neill was at the game when he broke his
single game touchdown record.
But Ed O'Neill really did score 4 touchdowns in a single game. It wasn't for Polk High, though. It was for Ursuline High School.
Ursuline High School. All right, I had to sneak that in there. I always do. All right, man, ready to wrap this up?
I am.
We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter or X or whatever you want to fucking call it. Thanks for listening. Have a great Father's Day. Enjoy. Bye-bye.